The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk TNT.
All right, launching into hour two of State of the Nation. We are live for today's News Talk. TNTRadio.live is our website. Hello to you over there in the interactive live chat room. Thank you for being with us. Try to peek in there whenever I can. Big shout out to Eileen and El Cid and anyone else hanging out in there. Great to see you. Thanks for being here for this live broadcast. I'll remind you that today's News Talk is live on audio and video 24/7. It is a feat no other network has ever completed before, especially with an independent flair like we have here at today's News Talk. I'm Brian McLean out of Central Texas. I'm here with Timothy Shea. He's in New York. Timothy, great to see you again for hour two.
Hour two is going to be just as much fun as hour one.
Gonna be lit. And speaking of lit, the 911 call centers were lit, but the lights weren't on as 911 call services mysteriously go down in four states at the same time. Just hours before ABC reported DHS is concerned about emergency services as they relate to targets for cyber attacks. So several states lost access to the 911 emergency services late last night, causing many residents not to have any access to emergency services. Now, hopefully you're like me and you didn't have to find that out the hard way. But in Nebraska, South Dakota, Texas, and Nevada, residents experienced emergency service outages from around 10 p.m. to midnight. Ooh, right there toward the witching hours, when people often need help the most. Authorities in Texas reported the outages were due to, quote, an outage with a major cellular carrier, end quote, but did not elaborate on which carrier was responsible, causing me to wonder, what is the single point of failure that has to do with cellular networks, Timothy? I mean, that doesn't even make sense to me.
Well, what's interesting is that it was four geographically disparate states, right? Texas, Nevada, Nebraska, South Dakota. How does that happen? Non-contiguous states all going down at the same time. My father was 911 commissioner in Onondaga County, which comprises Syracuse, New York. And I learned a lot about how 911 centers are built because he built ours. He was a former New York Telephone Company manager and was responsible for installing all the technology. In fact, it was the latest and greatest when it was stood up. If I dialed 911 in Massachusetts, my call got routed to his call center in Syracuse before it got routed back to my local police. That's how advanced the technology was in his center 30 years ago. It does rely largely on cellular, but there are other components as well, mostly internet, Brian. And this is life critical. We just saw here in Syracuse last Sunday, the two officers, the officer and the sheriff's deputy that were gunned down by a mad gunman, a 911 call came out and there were officers on scene right away. And within a couple of minutes and able to subdue that assailant. People having heart attacks, people having, you know, emergency car accidents. This is literally life and death stuff. If only there was some thread connecting these four states. Yeah, they're all Republican. At least, well, Nevada's almost sort of Republican.
Yeah, definitely a battleground place. Definitely one that Biden's not doing well in right now.
Yeah, not right now.
Yeah, that... That hit my radar, too. I had the same thought. Again, we didn't talk about this before the show, but I definitely had that same thought. And, also, I have to throw out, I want to read from Edward Snowden's ex again real quick here. Cool. So this week, the Senate is voting to let the NSA take over the internet and authorize warrantless surveillance of Americans. And the House is voting to take another $100 billion from you, a tenth of a trillion to squander on fruitless foreign wars. I flagged up a number of interesting comments under Mr. Snowden's post there that I just read. Here's just a couple that I thought were tasty. The scam must end now. End of the empire, but not the abuse. Our representatives hate us. That much is clear. The country is lost and both parties are active participants. If instead the U.S. spends billions at home to improve the United States, woke cities may not look as shabby. And here we go. This one's good. We are almost to their goal, complete narrative control and silencing dissenting votes. I could go on, Timothy, but, you know, I think you get the point.
The best post I saw on X today was a video of two migrants engaged in a thrusting action underneath a tarp. Both of them were face down based on how their feet were positioned. And someone commented, the government doing it to the American public? And I said, well, the positioning is correct.
witty per usual. Hey, if you love a good documentary, then you'll love our special screenings, Uninterrupted Cinema features some of the latest or notable documentaries from the world's best filmmakers. Check out TNT's website for more information. Weekends are always better when you spend it with us on today's News Talk TNT.
Delivering the facts.
The source I can trust.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, we are joined now by our friend and regular contributor over here at State of the Nation, Mr. Gene Valentino, once again, host of the Grassroots Truthcast, one of the best podcasts out there. Gene, welcome back to State of the Nation. Good to see you, my friend.
Thank you. Thank you, Brian and Timothy. Glad to be with you.
Hey, you know, we got a lot of Trump stuff we could talk about, but I, you know, those first two stories we threw out there, I can tell, I can see it in your eyes. I know you want to comment on that, so hop on in here.
Well, that last one that Timothy brought up with both of them in a thrusting downward facing position, I call that migration interruptus. That's got to be a distraction for whatever their deep state agenda is. I think took them off. I think it derails everybody. So the story was a good one. But yeah, Trump seems to be in the headline even as we speak. I've also found your comments about Roger Stone very interesting. You know, isn't it true? You had a guest on moments ago that got the same treatment, actually worse. He was on his way to jail. Can you imagine someone knocking on your door, banging down the door at 4 or 5 in the morning for an in a SWAT team format with no felony or apparent imminent danger imposed upon the community? And they felt they had to take that kind of theater to his home at that early hour.
Well, with CNN already positioned outside.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Very good. Yeah. I mean, they tipped off CNN. I wish they didn't tip off Fox News or Breitbart or any of the other outlets. But it's clear that I was just watching on the news earlier today. These media in general are out to get Trump. They just need to put him away. The government knows that as Mr. Stone and you guys concurred, that President Biden must be jacked up on something, because he goes through moments of lucid behavior and then falls into some coma while he's walking past people. Is a propped up president that is not on his game, and I'm embarrassed for the nation. The problem is, it's that kind of vitriol that thinks that guy, it's more important to hate Trump than it is to protect this nation and provide good leadership. That's what's scary right now. And they showed that bad behavior in trying to go after Roger Stone. What a shame, because Roger has been a historian, but he's also been a contributor to this nation going back through several presidencies, and has a history that, you know, you want to get to the truth on some of these political issues, go to a guy like Roger Stone, who has the face-to-face firsthand knowledge on some of the bad behavior that occurred in the presidencies leading up to Donald Trump.
Yeah, and here's how bad it is, Gene. In New York State, violent criminals that are in pretrial detention, right? So they're at Rikers Island, they're in jail. Their trials are scheduled first. They get priority. Next are violent criminals that are out on pretrial release. White collar criminals are not even being prosecuted here in New York State. They're still working their way through the criminal cases from 2021, 2022, the violent criminal cases. And white collar crime isn't even being prosecuted. And here you have a non-crime, something they had to paste together, six different statutes and a questionable court ruling and a couple pieces of bubble gum and some duct tape. And yet this goes to the head of the line. It's clearly a political witch hunt.
So what is the consequence and what is the remedy? That is the point. I've talked about Gene's second Bill of Rights and creating a mechanism that addresses the immediacy of bad behavior within the government itself. How do we remedy it before there's an internal takeover that is attempted to take down the governance altogether? We need a way of stopping these bad actors midstream and getting this matter under control sooner than later.
I would advocate for that too, Gene. And I think we need a writ of transparency. I think that we need some sort of proper audit of things that have been labeled secret, or you know, whatever they're showing these guys in the skiff on under Capitol Hill, and we need to know why. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene was actually saying this today quite loudly. You know, you need to be transparent with us if we're going to give up our freedoms over foreign wars and threats of, you know, domestic attack. Then that needs to be made credible to the American public, and you know, that representation should be had.
Yeah, well, those fears that are instilled in the citizens, an egregious action against Roger Stone also sets into motion a threat to the rest of us. Oh, my words, if that can happen to him, might it happen to us for something much less next week? And I'm so proud of our governor, if I can speak to that for a second, Governor Ron DeSantis. I hate the fact that he had to step out of the national scene, but boy, he gets an A+ with me on the way he's managed the state of Florida. Just signing a bill into action that says that the Florida educators, are required now to teach the evils of communism under this new law. The Florida educators are required to teach the history of the tactics used by American communist movements, that as well as all the negative events that occurred under communist regimes. Now, the kids must learn how and why Karl Marx, Marxism, was wrong, and come to understand that people still cling to failed Marxist theories like religion out of fear and envy, despite their long trail of human destruction. Schools should also teach basic and free market principles as related to the democracy. And every student needs some grounding in business economics and business ownership. I'm an adjunct professor at the local college, and I teach business entrepreneurship every week. And I got to tell you guys, getting the values and the incentives and the motivations reinstilled into our students, even before they reach Columbia University, to learn what is necessary about opportunity and freedom and liberty in this nation.
Yeah, yeah. Gene, quickly, before we have to let you go, do you have any thoughts on Mike Johnson and this whole FISA thing? You know, a lot of conservatives right now are pretty upset to see what's happened.
Well, he's got himself in a pickle. There was a briefing he had, a private intelligence briefing recently, that I think he's bringing forward a $95 billion aid package, which addresses Ukraine and Israel and a little bit of Southeast Asia, Taiwan. But where's that coverage we screamed about for our southern border? Nada, not in it. And that's what's causing the conservative Republicans to flare up. We've talked about it too. Protect the border first before you tell me about any foreign interests. America's ready for that discussion. And I think he must have received some intelligence through some of the intelligence briefings that may have swayed his mind on why we should do something for Taiwan, Taiwan, Ukraine, and Israel. I'm not against that, but I'm just still frustrated with the total abrogation of the president and the Democrat Congress in protecting our southern border.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's that transparency we're asking for. If you're learning something that groundbreaking and changing that could, you know, repolarize the 118th, you should be able to let us know, or at least, you know, at some level. None of this, you got to take my word for it, because I was in the haunted house known as the Skiff. All right, GeneValentino.com is the website. The Grassroots Truthcast is the podcast. Gene, anything else on the way out?
God bless America. We'll survive it. And next year will be even better.
All right. I like those words of positivity. Gene Valentino, great to have you with us. Again, GeneValentino.com is where you keep up with all things Gene Valentino. And of course, right here on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
TNT's Alex Zaharoff-Royt.
They need to expand the number of places and countries that can make ARM-powered processors. And Intel has actually made chips designed with ARM designs for years. This deal will give Intel's foundries, two of which are being built in the US at a cost of $20 billion, more chips to make. Now, TSMC has received $6.6 billion from the Biden administration towards its much-delayed 3 and 4 nanometer chip foundries in Arizona. So while we went from a drought of chips during the pandemic, the second half of this decade should see even more chips being manufactured than ever before, which the world will need, considering the AI boom currently underway will need ever more computing power to satisfy the ever-growing demand.
Talking Tech with Alex Zaharoff-Royt on today's News Talk, TNT. TNT is an independent global news talk station that does what others only say they do. TNT is a live radio and TV broadcaster that simply tells the truth 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. No one in the world does what we do, crisscrossing the globe, providing credible news and opinion all day and all night. In 2.5 years, TNT has become a credible and exciting platform with brilliant hosts and staff. It's a critical time, and we must continue to call out the misinformation and propaganda from mainstream media and their powerful sponsors. We're now appealing to our many friends and supporters around the world to go to tntradio.live and make a small donation to TNT while we seek the right investors to continue our important mission.
Are you sitting comfortably?
Oh, yes, yes.
Then I'll begin.
Even when you're just sitting around, we're rocking the talk.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Joining us now with breaking news from the United Nations Security Council is TNT political editor Basil Valentine. Basil, what's the scoop?
Evening, Timothy and Brian. Great to be with you, and hello to our viewers and listeners all around the world. Unsurprisingly, the United States has vetoed the Palestinian request for full admission to the United Nations. The 15-member Security Council voted 12 in favor, which therefore includes France, China, and Russia. The United States was the only country to vote against, with abstentions from the United Kingdom and Switzerland. US officials and diplomats had been hoping that Washington could avoid having to use its veto if other countries had objected to the draft resolution, but they all decided to vote in favor, apart from the two abstentions I mentioned. Washington's position is that the emergence of a Palestinian state has to be the outcome of negotiations on all aspects of a Middle East peace settlement. According to John Kirby, we completely believe in the two-state solution and a state for the Palestinian people. We believe the best and most sustainable way to do that is through the direct negotiations between the parties. But we all know that the Israelis have completely ruled out a Palestinian state, and the White House is far from prepared to apply the necessary pressure to bring about a change of heart in Tel Aviv. So it's back to the stalemate.
Well, you can't have your pudding if you don't eat your meat, right? And every time a two-state solution, including before Israel was even founded, was proposed, the Arabs have rejected it. So how does this somehow devolve onto Jerusalem?
Well, you've got a different understanding of history from me, Timothy. You know, the recognition of a Palestinian state at this point would be largely symbolic, because I'm not exactly sure where it is supposed to exist. Gaza has been razed to the ground, estimates now in excess of 50,000 civilian deaths. It looks a different color from space. And meanwhile, Israel continues to build illegal settlements in the West Bank. Over 300 Palestinians have been killed by settlers and the IDF in the West Bank since October the 7th, to go with another 300 before October the 7th. Now, the Palestinians don't always help themselves. I'll grant you that. Well, you know, widespread allegations of corruption in the Palestinian Authority. But over the last 50 years or so, it's quite obvious that Israel has had no intention whatsoever of wishing to live in peace with its neighbors. It's been an endless story of slow motion genocide and ethnic cleansing, which has accelerated with really horrific consequences in terms of the human suffering of the people in Gaza over the last 6 months.
Well, I don't know where the genocide and ethnic cleansing are. The 2 million Arabs in Israel are the only Arabs in the Middle East that have any civil rights whatsoever. And the beaches today in Gaza were packed. We thought we were looking at Florida on spring break, but it was Gaza.
Are you joking? The fact that you know, there were some extremely ragged looking Palestinians on the beach in Gaza today who weren't actually being shot at in that moment doesn't exactly mean they were having a wild party. You mean any semblance of people behaving vaguely normally is somehow indicative of the fact that they are not being genocided? The United Nations have said only today that for 101 different reasons, the Israelis are still preventing sufficient aid reaching northern Gaza in particular, meaning that people are starving to death every day, being deliberately starved to death. Do you endorse that, Timothy? Do you endorse the drone?
But that's
firing
just
a
factually not true.
Children's
that's
program.
Factually not true. The beaches I'm referencing are in northern Gaza. And every time Israel brings food in, it's the Palestinian Authority that seizes it and isn't taking it to the people. It's the Palestinian Authority that has built hundreds of kilometers of tunnels, placing themselves militarily, using the people as shields. To refer to Israel as genocidal is a complete perversion of history. I guess Basil comes down to the fact that I don't stand with beheading babies, raping women, and mutilating their bodies. I just don't.
Are you for real, Timothy? The whole beheading babies story has been completely debunked as a 100% lie. Of course it has.
The New York Times doesn't back it up. Even the New York Times is the one that pushed that story, and the writer of that story has had to take it back and admit that they don't have any evidence of this. And you know, the other thing is, like, they've bombed food convoys. They've dropped pallets.
That was not true. That food convoy was blown. No. That food convoy was blown up by an IED. It was not bombed.
They've bombed journalists. They've bombed the families.
That was all debunked within hours, Tim. I'm surprised you're clinging to this stuff. That story was
debunked. What was debunked was that the IDF bombed that food convoy that was blown up by an IED that had been planted by the palace by Hamas. Also debunked is that Israel fired on a consulate in Syria. That was no consulate. It was a building that was rented by Hamas. It was nothing diplomatic about that building. That has all been debunked as well.
It's first off,
to know Hamas, where to start, Timothy. Go on, Brian.
Not run the Gaza Health Ministry. It's funded by the Palestinian Authority. And it's manned by professionals, not terrorists. Their numbers have been verified. The death toll numbers have been verified by the UN, UNICEF, et cetera. Those are the people that are there.
Fewer civilian deaths than military deaths, which is very rare in a war. Look at the comparison to Ukraine. Far more civilian deaths in Ukraine than military.
Timothy, have you not seen the pictures of the children that are literally withering and starving to death?
like those to have been debunked, to, I, Brian.
I'd like to, listen, I'd,
no,
I'd
they
like
haven't.
To, and this I, is I'd what like I to, talked about last week.
I'd like to pivot to something factual for a moment.
Let's take a headline first. Basil, okay. Hold up. Let's take a quick headline here. We'll take a breather, bring a headline in, we'll come back, and we'll pick up right where we left off on State of the Nation at today's News Talk, TNT.
Okay, everybody, listen up.
Big news.
Big news.
Real big news.
Here we go.
Now, TNT Radio News.
For TNT, this is James O'Neill. The U.S. Senate successfully passed a procedural vote with a 67-32 majority to move forward with reauthorizing Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA, which is set to expire on April 19th. Russia's investigative committee has charged four Ukrainian military colonels in absentia with mass murder, according to Moscow's Kamenevsky court.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
So, Basil, the kangaroo court clown show taking place in Lower Manhattan has gotten even more ridiculous today with not only one, but a second seated juror now being removed after being sworn in by Judge Merchan. What's going on?
I don't know, Timothy. I haven't got a clue. I haven't read it for this segment. I don't think that was on the docket for our discussion there. Was it on the docket for our discussion? No, I want to refer back to two potentially huge legal cases. The first one relates to the Lavender AI, the artificial intelligence program that Israel has been using to kill people based on them being in the same WhatsApp group. This is where they use AI to guess who to kill in Gaza and then bomb them when they're home, along with their entire family. Hence, the Israelis call this program "Where's Daddy?" Do you like that name, Tim? Do you think that shows real class, doesn't it? Anyway, it seems that Meta, the owners of WhatsApp, may have been sharing information with the IDF about who's in which WhatsApp group. Basically, if you're in the WhatsApp group of somebody who the IDF thinks is a Hamas terrorist, which basically could mean anybody, then you become a target as well as your whole family. That's how they've managed to kill 50,000 people. But of course, this could be a potential class action lawsuit if it turns out Meta had been sharing information like this, which brings us to the question of whether or not Palestinians have the same rights to recourse to law as anybody else, because, you know, Meta could be responsible for billions here. The other story, which I'm sure you'll like more, Timothy, is that UK insurers are refusing to pay out for the damage to the Nord Stream pipeline because they are claiming in their filings that the blasts were government-backed. Now, the defense of Nord Stream AG's insurance companies had been filed. Lloyds and Arch argue that the damage was inflicted by or under order of a government, and therefore they don't need to pay. They may well have to argue that case in court. My speculation is that when they have to do so, they will fail to name the country and say conclusively this particular country carried out the Nord Stream sabotage, and will instead rely on arguments that the sophistication and logistics required to carry out the operation could only have been done by an organization with the infrastructure and wherewithal of a nation state, but without saying who. Nevertheless, fascinating development.
Of course, well, we're all in agreement here that I think we can all name the country. We had a sealed we had a seal exercise going on just about 10 kilometers away. Of course it was us.
Yeah. I mean, I would reference Seymour Hersh's great work and Freddie Ponton over at 21stCenturyWire.com on that one, because there are mountains of evidence to go through on that one. And I think you guys are right. They're not going to name the country if this does go to some sort of court. But getting back to Lavender, I have to make a comment on this Lavender AI. You know, in a previous career, I used to work in one of my capacities on a project called Joint Battlespace Awareness Integration Information and Control. And it was all about supporting our military's tactic of having a person on the ground to help designate a target and make sure that there was going to be minimal collateral damage. And we, as you know, researchers in my capacity and as the United States military circa that time, we put great emphasis on that. And I thought that that was a good thing. You know what I mean? We don't want to see someone send a Tomahawk missile at a house going parallel with the neighborhood, for example, maybe perpendicular, you know, if they've got a solid target. But this was all about having a person that had eyes on the target, who was communicating with air assets and other things. This was the rule of engagement. No one's pulling a trigger on large-scale military munitions without that person in the loop. And to think that not only there's not a person in the loop, but that they're using AI and giving it 20 seconds to decide whether to send munitions like that into any location is obscene to me. That is obscene to me as someone who's worked on these programs in hopes of keeping military munitions headed towards military targets.
It's chilling. And Brian, here's yet another parallel with us. I worked on that program too. And you're absolutely right. You had to have a human that was painting the target with a laser and verifying that that's what it was. Our component was sensors and part of the IFF, the identification friend and foe aspect of that program. But I think we could all agree that combining social media databases with AI is a recipe for disaster, not only for individuals, but for humanity at large.
I would agree with you on that. And let's remember, you know, that right after October the 7th, Yoav Gallant, the Israeli defense minister, was quite clear. He said, our aim is destruction, not accuracy.
Well, clearly they're getting pallets of 2,000-pound bomb JDAMs. I mean, that's not a accuracy munition right there. That is a neighborhood leveling munition. So what's up with that? You know, we're told that these are precision strikes, but they're not using precision munitions.
Well, I mean, you know, the whole precision strikes things is a sickest joke of all time. Last point, will this become a case in law as well? The United States State Department has failed to act on internal reports of human rights abuses by the Israeli army and police units, raising questions over whether Washington's continued supply of arms to Israel is breaking U.S. law. Apparently, Blinken has been quashing staff and in a foul mood in the State Department, refusing to listen to his own officials, one of whom resigned a couple of weeks ago, if you remember, who are raising legitimate concerns about war crimes. I would have thought that would have been a concern, breaking U.S. law to all patriots, Timothy.
You know, yeah, and as far as Meta goes, let me just talk about this for a second. Meta, or any other corporate industry for that matter, really has shown their hand here. If these allegations turn out to be true, and they're giving WhatsApp information to military assets, that's kind of a big deal, especially if they're being used in the way that it appears that Lavender is being used, because I mean that's like saying, I'm in a WhatsApp group with a whole bunch of people. I don't know who's in a WhatsApp group with me. I have no idea how many people persuasion.
You can be in a WhatsApp group with people in the same neighborhood for a sanitary, you know, plumbing reasons, or a tennis club. It can be 101 different reasons. But let's look at Meta for a moment. Chief Information Security Officer Guy Rosen is their most senior policymaker. And where does he live? Tel Aviv. And he was in the Israeli military in Unit 8200, which is the Israeli NSA and the department that built and runs Lavender. Enough said.
Yeah, well, as I said, I think we can all agree that combining social media databases with AI is terrifying. And as for the insurance companies, we had called this, that it was going to be the insurance companies that would finally get the truth out about Nord Stream 2. And also the insurance companies, I believe, Basil and Brian, that are going to the reason why Joe Biden said we were going to pay, we, the American taxpayer, we're going to pay for the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge was because the insurance companies would conduct an investigation and get to the bottom of that. Is this just another government cover up? Basil, can't thank you enough. Another great hit here on today's News Talk.
JDRF's vision is to create a world without type 1 diabetes. The type 1 diabetes community is at the heart of everything JDRF does. We were founded by the type 1 diabetes community. In the main, we are governed by the type 1 diabetes community, we're energised by the type 1 community, and we're accountable to the type 1 diabetes community. It's on their behalf that we exist, and it's on their behalf that we must succeed. JDRF exists to rid the world of type 1 diabetes. It's easy to say, but it's hard to do. So for us, that means rallying all the resources and all the people and all the organisations required to make that a reality as quickly as possible. The world's best researchers, exciting innovative companies, and the passion of the type 1 diabetes community, then delivered through the health system so lives get better every day, day after day, until the day we find a cure. To everybody in the type 1 diabetes community, no matter your age or stage with the disease, whether you were diagnosed recently or a long time ago, we need you to know that we are here working on your behalf to deliver a world without type 1 diabetes as quickly as we can. Thank you to everybody who's supported JDRF in so many ways. You are making our vision of a world without type 1 diabetes possible.
She was reading at a second grade level in kindergarten.
Pod force swimming before she was seven.
Finally convinced mom to get her ears pierced in the third grade.
Came in second at her fifth grade spelling bee.
Drill team in the seventh.
And with one stroke of the keyboard.
One click of the mouse.
It's gone.
It's gone.
It's gone.
Report a cyber tip today.
The conversation continues with State of the Nation's Brian McLean and Timothy Shea on today's News Talk, TNT.
A divided Supreme Court wrestled on Tuesday with the scope of a federal obstruction statute used to prosecute hundreds of people who breached the Capitol on January 6, 2021, in a legal battle that could have ramifications for the election interference case against former President Donald Trump. At issue in the court fight known as Fisher versus U.S. is whether federal prosecutors can apply a law passed in the wake of the Enron scandal to the J6 event. The measure makes it a crime to corruptly obstruct or impede an official proceeding. You've probably heard these words before if you've been paying attention. And if you're watching this show, I know you have. And defense attorneys argued that the Justice Department has turned the measure into a dragnet. Our next guest is an Army Reserve veteran who was recently released from jail after spending nearly 3 years incarcerated for nonviolent offenses on January 6th. His name is Tim Hale, and he's rejoining us here on State of the Nation for his thoughts on this SCOTUS case that could have sweeping ramifications for those that are currently being held by the federal government for their involvement in events of J6. Tim, welcome back to State of the Nation. So tell us, how important is this case, and are you encouraged to see a number of the justices taking a skeptical look at the application of this Enron-era statute?
Well, first of all, yeah, thank you. Thank you for having me back on. I think there are multiple bullet points really to go through here. You're right that the justices do seem to have to be very skeptical, and this seems to be actually in spite of any arguments that the lawyers are actually arguing. It seems to be that they were more prepared to go after the prosecution than even the defense. So that's actually very, very interesting. I think there is the indication that these judges, they know that this is garbage, and it seems like the jig is up. I don't want to, you know, get ahead of myself, but it seems like that could be the case. That's really the first thing, is that these judges really don't need the arguments presented to them. They already have them. Because keep in mind, this is the highest, I guess that would make sense. They are the highest court in the country. But one of the other things I think is very interesting is, well, there are several. One of which is, this is really going to upset a lot of these cases, but it's especially going to impact President Trump. One thing that I like to mention when I do these interviews is, because most people haven't heard this aspect to it, the 1512 charge was first upheld for federal informants. So 18 USC 1512, and this is actually another bullet point, it's an overly broad statute that goes back to the Enron scandal. But in terms of January 6th, the prosecution's admitted that basically this is basically only going to be used for January 6th defendants and no other rioters or protests ever besides January 6th. One thing that people need to understand is that the first time 18 USC 1512 of this, and the substatute of that statute for obstruction of an official proceeding, the first time it was actually upheld in federal court was, I believe it was Judge Friedrich, and it was for defendants Ronald Sandlin and Nathan DeGrave. Those co-defendants actually admitted to us inside of the DC jail that they were at the Capitol to get out of trouble because they were caught in conspiracies in 2020. Nathan DeGrave especially was caught in a drug conspiracy. Nobody hears this. Nobody knows this. But I have signed, I literally had the signed testimony of the guys I was in jail with. We all heard this. And so there's a lot of infiltration, and we can get into all the infiltration at the Capitol if you want. But the point here is, the first time this statute that's being applied to January 6th defendants and now against President Trump was first upheld, it was first upheld for federal informants. And in my eyes, I don't see a scenario where that wasn't planned ahead of time. So I really want people to understand, like, this isn't just a coincidence. They were planning to get, I think they were planning to go after President Trump years before he even officially announced for this current election. So I don't think January 6th was just a way to sabotage his last election. I think it was a way to sabotage him long term. So that's a really important thing. People can take it with a grain of salt. We've talked on my social media. I literally have posted scans of these documents that everyone has signed stating, yo, that dude's in Antifa. That dude's an informant. This dude admitted this. It's all sabotage. So take it with a grain of salt. But this was all planned.
No, I think you're absolutely correct. It was absolutely a Fed's erection, and it was done to prevent him from ever returning to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. Their whole case is falling apart right now. My favorite moment from Tuesday's hearing was when Justice Gorsuch asked the Solicitor General whether pulling a fire alarm to delay a vote would earn you 20 years in jail, a clear shot across the bow of Democrat Representative Jamal Bowman.
Especially like when they threw in there the mostly peaceful protest line. That was pretty funny.
Yeah. So
I'm glad to know we have some trolls on the Supreme Court. I have some kin there, I guess. So that's pretty funny.
Yeah, that was a little bit heartening to see for sure, you know, because just using the phraseology that they've used there and the examples that they use there really sort of show that they see the ridiculous nature of some of this. And, you know, I would argue that, you know, if we zoom out on this, you know, this topic a little bit, I would point out to people on the left, or maybe people that don't like Donald Trump for, you know, their own reasons, that if this becomes law, if this becomes the kind of thing that is normalized and the Supreme Court doesn't stop it, it can be applied to any political enemy moving forward. And you never know when that pendulum is going to swing one way or the other. And it really does, you know, illustrate a, you know, a high level of decrepitude of our country and our, you know, our founding principles.
Well, you're absolutely right. And I'll say this, everybody uses the term banana republic. You know, the truth is, like, that term goes back to the banana wars when, you know, you'd have tin pot dictators and interventions and occupations and all that, you know, all that stuff going on in Latin America. But the thing about Latin America is they use the Roman legal system. We have a common law system. So actually, I feel like this is actually worse, because when you get something inside of the common law system, it becomes precedent for almost forever. I mean, when you think of how long it took, how many generations it took between, say, Plessy v. Ferguson and Brown versus Board of Education, or no matter what anybody thinks about abortion or whatever, but like look at the time gap between Roe v. Wade and just recently. I mean, this is a terrible precedent. And I would say this, and I always make this point, actually, it's a very salient observation, a very prescient one, that, you know, when you look at the history of the FBI, for instance, they used to target the left. They used, you know, the feds used to target unions. They used to target the civil rights movement. They used to target the anti-war movement, the peace movement. The pendulum can always swing back in the other direction. And when you look at the entrapment aspect, it's the same thing too. The feds have infiltrated everything from, you know, the civil rights movement to the Ku Klux Klan. So, I mean, there's nothing they won't infiltrate. And when you create a precedent, a legal precedent that actually incentivizes the feds to entrap people, you're putting a target on the back of over a third of the population. It's completely unacceptable. And if it can happen to Trump supporters today, it can happen to anyone tomorrow. And it's a horrible precedent. And it's like, as a short aside, I'll say, it kind of reminds me of like the busing the illegal alien sort of thing that they're doing. It's hilarious, don't get me wrong, but it's actually horrifying to me, because instead of governors just doing their job, it's like a cold war going on between governors of the four largest states in the country. It's a terrible precedent. So, I mean, just in general, like we're just spiraling down. It's like the country is collapsing. And if we don't have any faith in our legal system, you know, like you don't have to like the guy with the opposite views of you. But the second you start normalizing imprisoning him, you're going to destroy the very fabric of your enlightenment-based society. Last thing I'll say is that, you know, it was President Harding who, you know, basically let out Eugene Debs. Eugene Debs was a socialist. He was against World War I. And ironically, it was progressive President Woodrow Wilson who went after him. So, I mean, that's a demonstration where you don't have to care what someone's core beliefs are. But if you believe in justice, you know, I mean, what's the saying now? You know, an injustice to one is an injustice to all. An injustice anywhere is an injustice everywhere. And justice delayed is justice denied. If this is upheld and it's not tossed out, that's pretty much the end to the Bill of Rights and the 14th Amendment. I mean, it's just...
I don't think you're overstating the case at all. And I commend you as somebody that found out the hard way that Facebook does not give you a 30-second 30-day ban. It was permanently nuked a year ago after getting my 31st 30-day ban and lost two accounts on Twitter. And Elon, I'd still love to have at TimboTim62 and at MAGA_Institute back, please. They don't like people telling the truth, and they hate it when we meme. If somebody asked me if I could be in the Trump administration, what would I want my role to be? And I said, Director of Memetic Warfare. And you have one of the best meme games I have seen on X, at Louis of Monmouth. Why don't you tell us about the handle and tell us what inspired you to turn what I can only imagine is utter rage and contempt for the federal government into humor?
Well, I appreciate that. You know, you're too kind. I kind of just came up with Louis of Monmouth like off the cuff. I don't know. I was trying to sound like, because Louis is my middle name. So, Sometimes my friends call me Lou. I thought, how can I sound like some stuck up aristocrat? I'm from Monmouth County, Louis of Monmouth. Was really just kind of happenstance. When we were in the DC jail, well, first off, they kept me detained without bond because of memes. So anybody who looks up my name is going to think I'm the second coming of the Third Reich or whatever. They're going to think that I'm this nefarious, malicious person. I was just a troll. I've been an internet troll since I was like 14 years old. So getting people mad on the internet was basically my bread and butter. And I was mostly a normal person. Like, you know, I've served in the military for like 12 years. I was a contractor for the government. I actually worked in my local congressman's office on the labor disputes and stuff like that. So I was just fairly normal person. But on the internet, yeah, I love memes. Meme magic, like, you know, like we said, meme magic is real. So when we were in the jail, though, you had these Antifa people in there who were trying to corroborate the government stories about me being an extremist. And so I created a cartoon series called The Daily Meme. And, you know, I actually kind of used it. And also I was a history major. So I kind of used memes as a way to document the actual history of everything that went on in our daily lives in the jail. So that's my contribution to the historical record, being a smart ass with cartoons. But it's important too, because I actually, like I said, everything's dated and stuff like that. This is actually part of the record now. So I post that stuff on Twitter along with, you know, more important and mature content too, you know, but, you know, some for the kids, some for the kids. No, not really. Don't show the kids. But I like memes. And frankly, when you're in solitary confinement like that, or when you're surrounded by agitators and informants and stuff and people who are there to sabotage your case, it's like, you need humor. You need humor. So like, yeah, a bunch of us just banded together. We drew cartoons. We had laughs and stuff like that because there was really nothing else. You had no religious services. You had no access. You couldn't have family visits. It's just staring at a wall all day, drinking coffee and, you know, draw a few cartoons. But I mean, that was really it. It was really a way to help us get through the time we were in there, because I was in the DC jail for like 2 years. Before I finally got to prison in BOP, the Bureau of Prisons, where you have a little more freedom, and you know that's a whole different story. But I mean, that's the story about the memes. It was really an escape, and thank God I did it, because some people don't believe some of the crazy stories out of that jail, but it's all real. Like this is a comic series called The League of Informants. It's like the Justice League's what do they call that? The Legion of Doom. So mm-hmm. I mean I had way too much time on my hands, but I'm sorry. I'm sorry for the tangent, but
we find it very, very interesting, Tim, you know, especially as fellow meme warriors, you know, it's really interesting and it gives me a little bit of levity to know that, you know, memes can even help someone in that dire situation that you were in. We got a couple minutes left, so leave us with this. If Fisher prevails and the high court finds the law narrowly covers that corrupt evidence-related conduct, what's at stake here? What's to gain, what's to lose, depending on how this goes?
Well, essentially, so it's not magic. So unfortunately, like, I would like to say that if they toss it out, everybody's going to go home. It's really not going to be like that. Unfortunately, it's going to be a whole nother process. People are going to have to go back in front of their judges. They're going to have to get resentenced. And this is assuming it's clean. If it's clean, then the judges are just going to, you know, toss it out or whatever. But there's the possibility that the Supreme Court's going to have some sort of compromise where they toss it out in theory, but there's going to be some nuance in how they determine it. And so the lower judges, I don't know. It could be that the lower courts have to basically dance around the issue before they decide to toss it out. Who knows? But at the very least, the defendants are going to have to go back in front of their judges to get their sentences vacated, at least for that statute. Then they're going to have to have their sentences recalculated, and they're going to be resentenced. But I will say this, and this is disturbing, is that a lot of these judges know that this is going to happen, and they're openly saying, as well as the prosecution, that they're just going to find other enhancements to use to give either the same or worse sentences. So people who fight their sentencing, they're going to have an uphill battle all the same, because they do not want to yield any ground on this. And it's disturbing, because this just shows it's not about justice. It's purely malicious. It's purely to make examples out of us. I mean, the last thing I'll say is I got the 15-12, but my sentencing guidelines were like 20 months. I should have been out at time served at sentencing. But I ended up getting, my judge gave me an upward departure. So I ended up getting 4 years instead of 20 months. I got over twice my guidelines. So a lot of this is about making examples out of people. It's not about truth or justice or anything like that. So I just say, you know, keep your fingers crossed, pray, not just for the precedent, but also for the lives that have been destroyed. I got a lot of friends who are rotting in prison over this, and it's absolute nonsense. They got dragged through the mud even harder than I did, and they don't deserve it.
Yeah, absolutely. And we saw what happened during the Summer of Love, and we didn't see any of this stuff being applied to any of those people. So that is well noted by Americans. Tim Hale, thank you so much. Give your X.com account a shout.
You got it. I am at, you can find me at Lewis of Monmouth, or just be easier, I think, to look up Tim Hale, criminally funny J6er.
All right. Thank you so much, Tim Hale. We'll look forward to your next appearance. Best of luck with everything. Now, we're just about to wrap up here. Let me read you something from Steve Sparandero on X. Always suspect that those offering security will come at the cost of your freedoms. National security is almost always a name for, we'd rather hide this from you because we're actually doing things against your self-interest and in our self-interest. If you can't keep it, Benjamin Franklin said, well, we haven't kept it. They have stolen our countries, and we haven't taken them back. It was stolen in November 1963. Corruption is hidden influence, or more appropriately, hidden influence has a higher chance of being malevolent or contrary to the self-interest of a country's citizens. We're in that phase of collapse now, watching the youth and the elite party on Caligula's barge, enjoying bread, wine, circus, and sex, while the technocratic globalist cabal is raiding the treasury, committing theft of life, liberty, and justice, culture, and assets. Hey, if your vote still counted, they wouldn't be...